This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Dearing. What a week in Washington. The House of Representatives won't meet again until next Tuesday after Kevin McCarthy was ousted as Speaker, while the possibility of a government shutdown could rear its head again in a matter of weeks. Meanwhile, state leaders here in Massachusetts turning up the pressure on D.C. over migrant housing and support. Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley of Massachusetts has been in the thick of it all, joins us now. Congresswoman, welcome back.
Good to be with you, Tiziana.
Good to have you. And I'm going to ask you to bear with me if my questions are a little long today, but I really want to be thoughtful about this, Congresswoman. We're in this unprecedented moment with key funding for all kinds of priorities here in the state on the line. House Democratic Whip Catherine Clark is a member of our delegation. The House resumes the process of choosing a speaker next Tuesday. She'll have a key role. And that is after a week of not doing the people's business. And with another possible shutdown looming, our entire delegation, Democrats. So the question is, during this time, has the Massachusetts delegation been meeting and coordinating? Do you together have a plan for how to represent the state's interests in this moment?
Well, you know, of course I'm biased, but I do believe not only during this time of chaos under a Republican majority, but at all times, the Massachusetts delegation is one that has been organized, strategic, effective, and I'm grateful for the leadership roles that many members of our delegation play, from Richie Neal to Catherine Clark to Jim McGovern. But we're all contributing and leading in our own way. And we're unified, just like our Democratic caucus. Democrats, I think, every day are making the affirmative case for why we need to get the gavel back, because we have proven that we are committed to centering the people over politics, unlike the Republicans, who from the very start of this 118th Congress have, it seems, chaos and confusion is not the symptom. It is the strategy. They are in disarray and they are disconnected from the plights and challenges of everyday people, while Democrats remain united, focused on the people and fighting for universal childcare, for lower costs of insulin, for student debt cancellation, for resources to combat food insecurity. You know, we're focused on the people and those issues that are top of mind.
So first, just for listeners, Richie Neal is with Ways and Means, Jim McGovern with the Rules Committee. You talked about chaos and confusion, so let's stay there for a second, because another set of interests for the people here in the state is the functioning of democracy. Former president now inserting himself. Next week, he's going to be there. He's endorsing Republican Jim Jordan of Ohio for speaker. He said he is willing to serve as speaker, which is actually not impossible under House rules. The former president has consistently demonstrated a disregard for the rules and processes of democracy. And he has said clearly in social media that his goal is to install a speaker who will ensure that he is, again, the next president of the United States. As an elected representative, how do you think about your responsibilities, Congresswoman Pressley, to make sure that the House survives, continues to function according to democratic processes, and comes out of this strong?
Well, you know, again, we find ourselves in an unprecedented moment, and that has been par for the course under this Republican majority. They continue to make history for all the wrong reasons. It's up to the majority party to pick their leadership. You know, they ousted him. I don't like the other options either. And I took no joy in the fact that we just voted for the first time ever to remove a Speaker of the House. It was a somber day. It was nothing that I was gleeful or celebratory about, because the people deserve better. And that remains my focus. The people deserve a functioning democracy. They deserve a functioning Congress. And I would say that Hakeem Jeffries, as the leader of our Democratic caucus, has conducted and comported himself with a grace and a decorum and leadership qualities that I think demonstrate his readiness to take the gavel. So
does the caucus plan to advance him as the Speaker of the House?
Well, I won't speak to that. I'll just say that I voted for Akeem Jeffries 15 times, and I would happily do it again, and I would invite Republicans to join us.
So let's stay with the funding side of this. I know you are, as the whole delegation is, mindful that current funding only lasts to mid-November. There were some appropriations questions on the table that are not getting done right now. You just mentioned the 15 rounds that it took to get to the last Speaker of the House. What is your top funding concern, sort of between now and November 17th and 17th to the end of the year, in terms of an allocation that is critical to your agenda for your constituents that's on the table and that you need to make sure gets funded, you know, and moves forward?
Well, you know, I think that was a 2 weeks ago at this point, but I voted yes to keep the government open, to prevent a manufactured government shutdown.
That actually, just a week ago, believe it or not.
Was it just a week ago?
I know.
Tiziana, bear with me.
It's fine.
I have to say, years on Capitol Hill are like dog years. So, you know, I'm just going to call it a solid 2 weeks.
It.
Everything always feels longer. That being said, there's no place I'd rather be and no work I'd rather be doing, particularly in this moment. But, you know, Democrats, again, we make the affirmative case every day. I think we prevailed in that fight because we centered the people who will be most impacted. And that remains our priority. Seniors without Social Security or Medicare help, women and children without food assistance, federal workers and contractors like food service and custodial workers. So my vote was for everyone in my district who called my office worried about where their next paycheck, groceries, or can of baby formula was going to come from. But the fact that we were ever even in that position in the first place is a damning commentary on the ineffective governance of this Republican majority. So they've proven it over and over again. And now we find ourselves with just 40 days to go before a government shutdown. And the Speaker of vacancy, I think it's important, you know, it should be obvious, but you have to level with people, is absolutely going to impact that. So next week, we'll be spending time electing a new speaker when we could be working on appropriations and passing long-term legislation to fund this government. So, I mean, again, the people deserve a functioning government. Republicans are unfit. They can't govern. And perhaps they should just step aside and let Democrats lead this House.
Is there a way, if that's what you believe, is there a way to do that? Here's what's on my mind, Congresswoman. It could feel to those watching like there is a car careening towards a cliff, and that if somebody doesn't grab the wheel, that car could go over the cliff. And if Democrats think they are the ones to grab the wheel, do you do that? How do you do that? Is there a point at which rather than watching a mess, you just take the wheel?
You know, I hear that angst, frustration, and, I certainly never ran for elected office to contribute to a deficit of trust in government and our institutions. I do get that. I understand that, but I'm not, going to play out hypothetical scenarios because just as there was a CR that came in the 11th hour, and although it never should have gotten to that point, Democrats acted and we acted in the interest of the people. And so I believe we'll continue to do so, that we'll be united and focused on the people. And so I don't want to play out any hypotheticals here. My judgment will be exercised with centering the people of the Massachusetts 7th in our country with any vote that comes before me or any potential decision. I mean, you have to just respect Tiziana. I mean, I've been talking about how we find ourselves experiencing every extreme anomaly as a nation. You know, so many things are unprecedented and at a historic tipping point. And it's just going to require more stretching, more resilience, more nimbleness for all of us, because we are in this moment our own analog. There's no stabilizing reference point. We've never been here as a country.
We're speaking with Massachusetts Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley here today. I want to shift a little bit. I want to talk about student loan payments now restarting after 3 years on pause. You have been vocal about wanting that debt canceled. That's not where we are, and they apparently won't be paused if the government shuts down. President Biden on Wednesday did eliminate an additional $9 billion in student loan debt through administrative processes. Here in the state, community college is now free for students 25 years and older, among others, and in some cases, the state's reimbursing some for debt they've already incurred. If you can't get all the student loan debt canceled at the national level the way that you want, and again, so far that hasn't happened, could this Massachusetts approach be a viable alternative you would want to champion further across the country?
Well, I love when Massachusetts leads and is a pace setter, and that has been true so often in so many instances, and including here. And, you know, we do need buy-in and action from you know, everyone at every level. Again, during the pandemic with the American Rescue Plan funds, you saw the presidents of historically Black colleges and universities using those monies to cancel student debt. This is a nearly $2 trillion crisis. It's choking at the promise of our families, our communities, our commonwealth, our country. And I think we've made a lot of strides. We're closer than ever before. Tiziana, when I first took this issue on, you know, several years ago, people tried to fringe and marginalize the issue. They thought the proposal of student debt cancellation would be regressive in impact. And we took this from hushed conversations at kitchen tables all the way to executive action by the president. So we've been working in earnest. Grassroots borrowers, civil rights organizations, labor union presidents, the president acted. But we have a corrupt Supreme Court that is far right, imbalanced, and extreme. Their legitimacy is largely in question, increasingly so. They continue to overturn the will of the majority of the people.
And then just to remind listeners, they overturned the president on this.
On his executive action, which would have delivered relief to 43 million people. So the courts are corrupt and they obstructed that progress. But I'm glad that President Biden and Secretary Cardona said a promise made is a promise kept. We're not letting go of borrowers, and we're going to continue to fight for relief and broad-based student debt cancellation. So I work with the White House closely on this. They're in a rulemaking process right now, and I continue to push for broad-based cancellation. At the same time—
Wait, so actually, I want to stop you there, though, yeah. Congresswoman, because I am keying in on the idea that the only way the court could have been incorrect about President Biden is by being corrupt. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that the Supreme Court is far right, extreme, imbalanced. They're corrupt because they've been enlisted by a Republican majority and extremist lawmakers from state legislators, lower courts. They've been enlisted as co-conspirators in advancing an extreme and harmful agenda that is also unpopular. And so my corrupt point is that they are obstructing the will of the majority of the people, as they have done on the decision of affirmative action in higher education, as they have done with the Dobbs decision in overturning Roe, and as they did in obstructing transformative relief to 43 million borrowers. That being said, the administration is still working in earnest, leveraging every tool available. The president does have the legal authority, and I'm fighting for broad-based cancellation and working closely with the White House on that while they're in that rulemaking process. At the same time, Tiziana, I am making sure that borrowers are aware of what relief is available to them through the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program, through income-driven repayment program, through the SAVE program. And I'm grateful for the partnership of our governor. I've been working with Mara Healey on the issue of student debt cancellation since she was in the AG's office, not even when she was the AG. And so I'm grateful that her commitment remains steadfast on that issue, because it is a deeply consequential one. So we are closer than ever before. Again, this was not an issue that was a part of the sort of daily lexicon or seen as a response for workforce recruitment and retention everywhere from an education and healthcare, and also to supporting our economy.
So I'm going to jump in here with our limited time left. There is another question that I want to ask you, Congresswoman, and I'm going to harken back a little bit to your time actually as a Boston City Councilor. It's an issue we're going to cover more today on Radio Boston. I'd like to get your take. Earlier this week, the Boston City Council voted along racial lines, 7-5, in favor of giving Boston Mayor Michelle Wu funding she was seeking to support a police intelligence center, one that I know you were very aware of when you represented people in the city of Boston as a councilor. I'm sure you still are as a congresswoman. It's a controversial police intelligence center. Those voting against the funding claim racist tendencies in the work of that intelligence center. It's called the BRIC. Your reactions to the move to provide additional funding and your feelings about the BRIC today.
Look, obviously, I've been head down on the situation in Washington. Yeah. You know, that's my job. But, you know, look, I'm not, you know, supportive of efforts that contribute to racial profiling, surveillance, and, you know, unwarranted criminalization. And there has been a pattern of behavior in that regard. These are issues that I work on, you know, on the federal level to combat profiling and surveillance. And, you know, that's all I have to say about that.
One last question for you. I know you're aware also that there was a meeting among some members of the Massachusetts delegation and state leaders about the pressure from migrants coming into the state. Our right to shelter law here creates costs in providing housing and other support. Congressman Jake Auchincloss called on the Biden administration to send Homeland Security representatives here. I think the intention, as he has expressed it, is to raise awareness about how it's stressing state resources. There are National Guard members already in hotels and motels where migrants are living. Homeland Security could, to them, represent a very frightening branch of the U.S. government. Your response to Auchincloss's move to ask Homeland Security to come?
Well, I was in the same delegation meeting, and we have, again, our delegation is united on this and every issue of consequence to our shared constituents. And I've been in ongoing communication with the White House, Secretary Mayorkas, and also the Healy Driscoll administration, as well as migrants, impacted families, and the community-based providers who've been meeting their most basic needs and standing in the gap. The fact of the matter is that this is a humanitarian crisis. It was one that was created as the result of a confluence of failed foreign policy resulting in great destabilization. Our climate crisis, which Republicans don't even think is real, resulting in climate refugees. So failed foreign policy and immigration policy. And now we have a humanitarian crisis that is at levels we've never seen before. And so it requires more than we've ever done before. But Massachusetts taxpayers cannot be burdened and fit the bill for what is a national crisis. A national crisis, humanitarian crisis, requires federal, robust resources. And I'm grateful that the Healy Driscoll administration has honored our values as a state in protecting right to shelter. And they have been very nimble. And the state legislature has also provided funding. But we need more to meet the most basic needs of these migrants and also to expedite the asylee process and also to expedite work permits. And then finally, as the House co-chair of the House Haiti Caucus, representing the third largest Haitian diaspora in the country, we need to redesignate TPS status for Haitians the same way that we have for Venezuelans. So I won't pretend that this is not a sobered landscape, but there's still a lot of things on the table that have not been tapped into and leveraged. I did deliver an additional $800 million to support some of the efforts that I think need to happen, but we need more.
All right, Massachusetts Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley, we covered a lot of ground. Thank you for joining us today on Radio Boston.
Thank you.
You are listening to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Dearing, and we just heard from U.S. Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley about a whole bunch of things. What's happening on Capitol Hill, the unprecedented removal of a Speaker of the House, the threat of a potential another government shutdown, the migrant inflow here in the state. Lots to talk about. Joining us now for some reaction, James Pindle, politics reporter for the Boston Globe, and Mia McCarthy, a fellow with Political who writes for the Massachusetts Playbook. James, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Mia, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So I'm going to start with reactions from each of you, sort of the key takeaways for you, James Pindle, and what we just heard.
I mean, look, this is a, when it comes to Ayanna Pressley, two things are absolutely true at the same time. One is that, you know, she's only been in Congress for 4.5 years. She is a force. And she already has such a national reputation that Republican presidential candidates will take a stage in a small town in Iowa, invoke her name, expect the audience to know who she is, and have a reaction to her. That's how big of a deal she has become. And at the same time, she has about as much power in this situation as you do, and as our listeners do. She has one little vote, but that vote obviously is not really up for grabs at this point. We know what she's going to do. But the fact of the matter is, your questions were spot on. The government is going to shut down on November 17th. The Senate is not coming back until October 16th. And it's even more chaotic. I can't tell you exactly how the House will pass anything by then. They may well do that. It's more likely we'll pass another continuing resolution. That's my gut. That is, there's no path to it. So we are in a chaotic moment, particularly in the House. And I think you heard the words from the Congresswoman represent that.
So I'll turn to you now, Mia McCarthy. Same question to you, sort of your big takeaways from that conversation. And I am mindful you were there, as I understand it, last weekend. So we'll keep that in mind in the backdrop.
Yeah, I definitely would reiterate what Congresswoman Pressley said about how you just feel like dog years up on Capitol Hill, and that's definitely been the case this week. I also didn't realize it had only been a week ago since that CR was passed. But yeah, I think the thing that stood out to me the most about what Congresswoman Pressley said, she really backed that the delegation is all unified together, and that the Democrats are pretty unified in their message. And I think that goes a lot back to Congresswoman Clark as the minority whip. You know, her job is to make sure that her party is all together on this, because ultimately when you're in the minority, like you said before, they each have just about as much of a say in this as, they only have one little vote. But when the whole party is unified in their vote, they're able to accomplish big things, including, ousting the Speaker of the House. Because they were able to unify their most progressive members and their most moderate members behind this, that ultimately led to their power. Again, it's a small amount of power, but it, in a way, forces Republicans to, figure out their own stuff themselves and not have to rely on a few moderates, helping them on anything.
So this small amount of power thing is interesting. And James Pindle, I'll come back to you here. We're speaking with James Pindle of The Globe and Mia McCarthy of Politico in follow-up to a conversation we just had with Massachusetts Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley. A couple of things on my mind there, especially looking at some of the writing you've done, James. Some members of the Republican Party actually framing all of this as, well, these are things actually the Democrats did. Only 8 Republicans voted against Kevin McCarthy as Speaker. All the Democrats did. Kevin McCarthy gave the Democrats a chance to, the Democrats almost shut down the government. That's all framing. I understand that. But there is going to need to be, it's going to get really interesting on the Democrat side now as Republicans scramble to try to find a speaker that they can all elect, especially with the former president interjecting himself on the Republican side. So is there an interesting moment where Democrats could have more power? You've been thinking about that. And if they do, what about what Ayanna Pressley said? Between Catherine Clark as Democratic whip, Richie Neal on Ways and Means, Jim McGovern, ranking member on the Rules Committee, that stuff matters.
You're correct in noting that, look, I don't know where we're going to be headed in the next 2 or 3 weeks, but I do know this. One number matters, 218. And there's a lot of paths to get to 218, which is the number of votes you need to elect a speaker or to pass anything. It's the majority in the House of Representatives. I do know that Republicans have 221 votes. That's why they have the majority. They can only lose 5 votes in particular. And I do know that right now there are only 2 Republican candidates for speaker, and only about a quarter of that caucus has endorsed either one of them. So look, are there possible scenarios, to go to your question, where Democrats play a bigger role? Yes. Here are 2 scenarios. One scenario is that Republicans probably cannot get their act together and get someone with 218 votes. And by the way, when the House returns next week, the people I talk to on the Hill say there's no way that Republicans will actually have a speaker. Things can change. And so if there is not some deep, deep consensus from all Republicans on who they're going to pick, then one of those Republican candidates can try to tick off enough, as in a good way, try to grab endorsements from enough Democrats. All you need is, 3 or 4 or 5, maybe 8, if this is the number we're looking at. Offer them chairmanships or, plum assignments or, earmarks or something for their district, and wheel and deal. And then suddenly you have a speaker. Second is, if there's absolutely no consensus on the Republican side, could Democrats do the opposite? As Ayanna Pressley said, she voted for Hakeem Jeffries 15 times in January, and she and the entire Democratic delegation did. Can they chip off 5 Republicans and offer them the committeeships or the plum assignments or legislation that they want passed or, some kind of plum project back in their district? That's possible as well. Those are the 2 main scenarios.
So here on the show, we try to stay local as much as we can. But I'm going to stay in this space in our conversation. And again, we're reacting with James Pindle here and Mia McCarthy. James is of the Boston Globe, Mia of Politico, after speaking with Ayanna Pressley. Because what you just talked about, these chipping strategies, James Pindle, at the heart of all of that is compliance and discipline or not in the Democratic Party. And Mia McCarthy, that's Catherine Clark's job. Catherine Clark is the Democratic whip. She is a congresswoman from Massachusetts. We did an in-depth conversation getting to know her recently. And I, talked to her about the fact that she's got this reputation. People call her the Velvet Assassin. She is known for discipline. So we actually are looking at a moment where a member of the Massachusetts delegation in an unprecedented time could have, and this is not like, 2% chance. She's got a key role to play, Mia, in how things unfold, and not even close to the same profile in some ways, sort of in the public psyche, as an Ayanna Pressley. Mia, sorry, I wasn't making it sure who I was talking to there.
No worries. 100%. I mean, Clark has really had a huge play in all of this, especially when you look at last Saturday in the final hours, passing this continuing resolution. I mean, and not just Clark, I mean, McGovern, the two of them really had a strong role in making sure that, if you saw, they basically helped stall time all day so that they could finish reading the 71-page bill after only being given, a few minutes to basically read the bill and then vote on it. Republicans said it was clean, but, Democrats had basically reiterated that, we can't trust you to say that this is exactly what we're looking for. And Clark and McGovern were kind of 2 central people at getting that done. McGovern, I was on the Hill when this was getting voted on. And McGovern, he helped orchestrate Democrats, individually, manually writing their votes. Normally there's a bunch of voting machines. They can individually swipe their vote. But he had them all line up single file. He told me, he was telling people, pretend you're in penmanship class, take your time writing your votes to ultimately stall to read that bill. So he's someone, he's been around for a while. He's the ranking member of the Rules Committee. So he also has definitely a lot of power in this, where he is kind of seeing things, he knows the policy of all of these rules, right? And that's even coming into place now with this speakership debate as pro temp speaker Patrick McHenry, after taking taking over this role, took Nancy Pelosi and Steny Hoyer out of their hideaways.
Right.
And he basically, it may not have the power to do that. And that's something Jim McGovern basically found out. So again, these people are going to be key players this week, even though they are in the minority.
So much to watch. James Pindle, Mia McCarthy, thanks so much for the reactions there.
Thank you.